former President Jimmy Carter created a stir a few weeks ago when he met with the leaders of Hamas in Syria and Gaza. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice criticized the visit, saying it was not a good idea for an ex-president to be sitting down with a group the U.S. calls a terrorist organization. But it was very much in keeping with Carter's post-presidential career, dedicated to ending conflicts around the world. And it was also a move reminiscent of President Carter's mother, Lillian, who taught her son, by example, never to fear controversy or criticism. Just in time for Mother's Day, President Carter is telling her life story in a new book called A Remarkable Mother, and he joins us now to talk about it. President Carter, welcome to Fair Game.
It's good to be with you, Faith, and all the folks around the country.
So, President Carter, this is not the first time you and I have met. Actually, you shook my hand on a plane one time, which I know you like to do with passengers when you fly. And I'm wondering, how do you stay healthy, shaking so many hands all the time?
Well, I always wash my hands after I get through shaking 300 hands on an airplane because I don't even know where all those hands have been. But I eat what my wife tells me to, and she's a wonderful dietitian. I take a lot of exercise, swimming, riding bikes, and I've been lucky. So that's how I stay healthy.
Do you think your mom would have approved? She was a registered nurse.
Well, my mother always gave us good guidance. One of the things she did was to be insistent on proper diet. And, of course, we didn't have to worry about getting exercise because I lived on a farm and I worked every day in the field. So if anything, I may have gotten too much exercise. One thing that she wrote on in her 70th birthday greetings to her children while she was in India in the Peace Corps was that we should do what we think is right and exciting and challenging and gratifying and unpredictable and not care what anybody says about it.
Now, you mentioned that she spent her 70th birthday in India in the Peace Corps. I want to talk some more about your extraordinary mother. She passed away in 1983, and Miss Lillian not only joined the Peace Corps when she was nearly 70, she ignored racial segregation in the South when you were a kid. Later, when you were president, she became a favorite guest for Johnny Carson and Merv Griffin, and of course, she raised four children. So of all of her accomplishments, what do you think made her most proud?
I would guess her children, and particularly her youngest one, Billy, who she always thought was the brightest, smartest, and also the most entertaining. Mother was a remarkable raconteur. She and Billy both liked to tell jokes and have a good time, and I would say they were more alike. But Mother was also very proud of her nurse's uniform. This was quite a step upward for her when she was a young woman, obviously about a year so before I was born, she met and married my father in nursing training. And Mother acted like a doctor for the roughly 200 or 300 African-Americans who lived around us out in Archery, Georgia. We didn't have any white neighbors. And Mother took pride, I think, in totally ignoring the law of the land then, which was separate but equal, or racial segregation, which our nation honored and observed for almost 100 years after the Civil War. So I think she liked to do strange things. She enjoyed that, and she liked to pass on her mores and customs to her children.
And then when she did go to India for the Peace Corps, I remember reading in your book, she asked specifically to be sent to somewhere warm where people had dark skin, right?
And were extremely poor. She wanted the poorest people in the world that had dark skin, and she preferred warm weather, yes.
So President Carter, she's writing you letters from India. She writes you about how she got folks excited about vasectomies by putting on a puppet show, and she learned how to speak Hindi with a Georgian drawl. I mean, did anything surprise you by this point?
No, not really. She went to the University of Chicago to prepare to be a Peace Corps volunteer, and she had to study Marathi because she thought she was going to be a registered nurse near New Delhi. But they sent her down to the southern part of India, near then Bombay, which is now Mumbai. And she had to learn, or supposed to have learned, a new language called Hindi, which was spoken by the untouchable people there. So she had to teach them a very strange subject, how to control having babies.
Yeah.
And she had to do it in Hindi, so she couldn't speak the language very well. She would memorize about five words at a time, and she had a tape recorder that was sent her, and she practiced over and over and over, and finally she put together entire sentences. And then she had an artisan in a little village called Bikroli make some puppets, like a man and a wife, and she would get under the stage and hold the puppets up and play the tape recording. And the husband and wife would fight each other when the wife insisted that the husband uses a condom, or when the husband insisted that the wife uses an inner urine specimen. And sometimes and they would settle on a vasectomy for the husband. So it was a very strange and complicated script that she wrote for that play.
She was very passionate about all her interests. She would not be interrupted while watching All My Children. I like how she got your sister to take notes on All My Children when she was out campaigning for you.
Mother insisted on being in the campaign, and she campaigned all over the nation for me for months and months. But she never missed, two particular TV programs. All My Children was one of them, and she got to be very close friends with the star in the show. And when she was ever out, she would make my sister, Gloria, take shorthand notes. Gloria wrote shorthand, and so Gloria would either read them back to her on the telephone at night, or Gloria would write them down, and so Mother could read them when she got home.
President Carter, when she was out campaigning for you, she would say things like, "Sometimes when I look at my children, I wish I had remained a virgin." So here's what I wonder. Do you have sympathy for John McCain? Because he's managing an outspoken mom of his own.
Well, when I was president, finally, I would have a press conference in the mornings, and the first questions almost invariably would be, "Mr. President, how do you react to what your mother said on the Johnny Carson show last night?" And I would throw up my hands and say, "Look, I am not responsible for anything my mother says or does. She has her own life to live. I'll just leave my own." But that quotation was one of the first ones on Trivial Pursuit, who said, "When I look at my children, I wish I had remained a virgin." And my mother said that, I think, on a Johnny Carson show.
Now, of course, you're a peanut farmer, but I was surprised to learn that Miss Lillian grew pecans when you were a boy. And you talk about visiting a pecan trader with your mama, and you watched her wheel and deal for the best price. What was that like?
Well, Mother had her nursing income that she could use to buy her clothes and my sister's clothes and so forth. And Daddy also gave her all the pecan trees on our farm. And Mother would quit nursing in November and collect the pecans, fix them up very well. And she was an expert on the culture of the nuts. So when she got ready to market them, she took them over to our county seat in Americus, Georgia. And Mr. Eli Adyar was an expert on pecans as well. And he would ordinarily pick up a few bad pecans and crack them and show the folks these nuts are no good. My mother knew as much about them as he did. So she would then pick up some of her best pecans and crack them, and she always got the best price for her nuts. So Mother was learned how to trade and how to outdo people quite early in her life.
I couldn't help but think while reading this story that was pretty good training for international diplomacy, the kind of work you're doing now.
Well, it was. Mother was completely outspoken. One time she won a major award called a Ceres Award and went to Italy. And when she was on her way over to Italy, the State Department people were extremely worried about what Mama was going to say. So when she got ready to get off the plane, they handed her a speech, and she threw it on the floor. She said, "I've already decided what I'm going to say." So she got off the plane, and she said, "Look, I'm a Methodist. I changed to a Baptist when I married my husband. But Catholicism really appeals to me, and I can't wait to visit the Pope." The second thing she said was, "You have a president here that I've had my eye on ever since my husband died. And I hope I'll have a chance to meet him." He was 82 years old at the time, by the way. And the third thing was she said, "I got one more announcement to make. I have never met an ugly Italian." That was Mama's speech when she got off the plane. Well, the State Department have never written a better speech than that for anybody arrived in a foreign country.
Now, we only have about a minute left before the break, but I do want to get into your own diplomacy. As I mentioned earlier, you drew some criticism for your meetings with Hamas a couple of weeks ago from Secretary Rice and others, although I know you've said no one in the State Department ever told you not to go. So, President Carter, are you glad that you went?
Very much so. I think it did a lot of good. I had a chance to meet with those leaders and also the president of Syria, who is also being boycotted by the United States government. Hamas won an election fair and square 2 years ago in 2006, and they got a majority in the parliament, but they were supposed to form the government. But the United States and Israel decided that they didn't want to see a united Palestinian government, so they declared that Hamas was a terrorist organization, and now they've been punishing them ever since. And I thought that I could help by getting Hamas to agree to support the peace process that's being supported by President Bush and Condoleezza Rice. And I think and I gave them five requests. They brought in all the leadership from around the world. They considered my request, and they gave me some very favorable answers.
President Carter, we have to take a break, so please stay with me for a minute. I want to talk to you about how long you think we should let this Democratic nomination process play out. Also coming up, music from Goldfrapp. I'm Faith Saley, and this is Fair Game from PRI. I'm Faith Saley, and this is Fair Game from PRI. I'm talking with former President Jimmy Carter. His new book is about his mom, and it's called A Remarkable Mother. President Carter, what does it mean to you to engage in personal diplomacy when you don't officially represent a government?
Well, I made it very plain that I was not representing the U.S. government at all. I just was representing myself and the Carter Center. The Carter Center has been involved in democracy and peace ever since I left the White House. We just finished helping to conduct and monitoring our 70th election in Nepal. In fact, I came from Kathmandu, Nepal, back to the Mideast and made my trip. So this is the work of the Carter Center, and we continue to do it, but always making sure that everybody knows that I'm not negotiating, I'm not mediating, I'm not representing the U.S. government at all. So I think it's perfectly good, and sometimes we can pass on information to the U.S. government officials and to others that might be very helpful to them. As a matter of fact, I got the Hamas leaders to agree that they would accept any peace agreement reached between the Palestinian leader, Mahmoud Abbas, and the Prime Minister of Israel if it was submitted to the Palestinians in a referendum. And that would include full recognition of Israel's right to exist and so forth, which they had never done before. Also, I induced Hamas, they announced it the day after I left, to have a ceasefire proposal just dealing with Gaza, whereas in the past they had always insisted on the entire Palestinian land, including the West Bank. They made that proposal, which unfortunately so far Israel has not accepted, but that would have ended rocket attacks, and it would also have ended the very bloody attacks that Israel has made against Gaza. I hope that eventually Israel will accept that proposal.
Since you met with Hamas, some of their spokesmen have denied what you've said. How do you respond to that?
Well, those, I've seen those. They were given primarily to Al Jazeera. And I've never heard of those people who gave them those denials. But I have rechecked with the top leaders of Hamas, the only leaders that they have in an official capacity. That's the members of the Politburo. And they have reconfirmed that all of the things they told me, they will honor.
Now, you're not the only ex-president to catch some flack recently. Former President Bill Clinton has been criticized for his behavior on the campaign trail on behalf of his wife. And people have been saying he hasn't been statesmanlike, that former presidents have an obligation to remain above the fray, you know, out of the cut and thrust of politics. What are your thoughts on his behavior?
Well, I would just say that if my wife were running for president, I would be there doing the same thing he's doing, helping in every possible way I could. And he has had some criticisms about a few comments he's made, but you know, when you make 8 or 10 speeches every day and you're cross-examined in detail by the news media that gathers around, many of them looking for some slip-up or, you know, some misstatement, I think former President Clinton has done a very fine job in helping his wife.
President Carter, are you glad that YouTube wasn't around when you were out campaigning and giving 10 speeches a day?
Well, toward the end, when I was winning primaries and others were losing, all the other candidates had this ABC program, Anybody But Carter, so they would line up against me. But during that final stages, after I became, the inevitable winner, every word that I said was recorded and compared. I had to say exactly the right words in Iowa compared to, say, Massachusetts concerning abortion or any other controversial issue. So YouTube may have let the general public know directly, but the news media watched pretty closely when I was there.
Yeah, you had to be careful about what you said. Your mom didn't.
No, that's true.
In a recent interview with the British paper, The Daily Telegraph, you said this of the Democratic nomination process. You said, "I don't see any reason at all to continue after June 3rd when we know who got the most delegates and most popular votes and who won the most states and so forth, and that it would be undemocratic if superdelegates overturned the pledged delegate count." So you know, there's essentially no way Clinton can overcome Obama on these counts. Does that mean that you think Obama should be the nominee?
It's too early to say, you know, and I've been very careful to say that I'm not going to make any declaration of preference until after the primary season is over. And by then, I think we will know who has won. There could be some unexpected catastrophe or something that would happen, or some unexpected boon that would come to one of the candidates. But I'm going to adhere to what I said earlier. But I don't have any doubt that the Democratic Party will come together before or during the convention, and that the loser will support the winner with enthusiasm. And almost all of the supporters of the loser will also support the winner. Very few of those Democrats who've been brought into the process because of their enthusiasm, particularly young people and African Americans, I can't imagine any of them voting for McCain.
Are you available to be a running mate, President Carter?
No, absolutely. I think they have an age limit.
No, they don't.
Well, they ought to.
Finally, Mr. President, we are both Georgia natives. I was actually growing up in Georgia when you were president. So I have to ask you the question I think is on everyone's mind. Which is the better Georgia junk food, something from the Varsity or a can of Coca-Cola?
Well, I like both. I went to Georgia Tech.
And oh, you did?
I had a lot of meals at the Varsity Hotel, Varsity Cafe, which is one of the biggest self-service in the nation.
Yep.
And I've always enjoyed it. But my wife, as I said earlier in the program, makes me eat the right thing. So country
that's
food,
no fun.
Particularly a lot of vegetables. Well, it is fun too. You know, you can't beat mashed potatoes and collard greens and you know, pork chops and fried chicken and barbecue. Those kind of things are still good. And the Varsity, by the way, is still a great place to go.
And that's, by the way, that's what your mom wrote in her letters from India. She couldn't wait to get back to collard greens and biscuits and a drink.
That's true. And she said a drink about every three.
Yes, exactly.
Every time she'd say about three things, and she'd say, and a drink.
And a drink, and then three more, and a drink, yeah.
Mama never drank early in the day, but she would continue to say it must be 5 o'clock somewhere.
Well, President Carter, it was an honor to have you on our program. And as your mom would say, you be sweet, you hear?
All right. Thank you very much. By faith.
Thank you. President Jimmy Carter's new book is called A Remarkable Mother. For more about him, please visit our website, morefairgame.org.